Comey recalled he did not want the president-elect to think of the conversation as a, quote, J. Edgar Hoover move, unquote. Footnote 114. On January 10, 2017, the media reported that Comey had briefed the president-elect on the Steele reporting. Footnote 115. And BuzzFeed News published information compiled by Steele online, stating that the information included, quote, specific, unverified, and potentially unverifiable allegations of contact between Trump aides and Russian operatives, unquote. Footnote 116. The next day, the president-elect expressed concern to intelligence community leaders about the fact that the information had leaked and asked whether they could make public statements refuting the allegations in the Steele reports. Footnote 117. In the following weeks, three congressional committees opened investigations to examine Russia's interference in the election and whether the Trump campaign had colluded with Russia. Footnote 118. On January 13, 2017, the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence, SSCI, announced that it would conduct a bipartisan inquiry into Russian interference in the election, including any, quote, links between Russia and individuals associated with political campaigns, unquote. Footnote 119. On January 25, 2017, the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence, HPSCI, announced that it had been conducting an investigation into Russian election interference and possible coordination with the political campaigns. Footnote 120. And on February 2, 2017, the Senate Judiciary Committee announced that it too would investigate Russian efforts to intervene in the election. Footnote 121. 3. Flynn makes false statements about his communications with Kislyak to incoming administration officials, the media, and the FBI. On January 12, 2017, a Washington Post columnist reported that Flynn and Kislyak communicated on the day the Obama administration announced the Russia sanctions. Footnote 122. The column questioned whether Flynn had said something to, quote, undercut the U.S. sanctions, unquote, and whether Flynn's communications had violated the letter or spirit of the Logan Act. Footnote 123. President-elect Trump called Priebus after the story was published and expressed anger about it. Footnote 124. Priebus recalled that the president-elect asked, "What the hell is this all about?" Footnote 125. Priebus called Flynn and told him that the president-elect was angry about the reporting on Flynn's conversations with Kislyak. Footnote 126. Flynn recalled that he felt a lot of pressure because Priebus had spoken to the, quote, boss, unquote, and said Flynn needed to, quote, kill the story, unquote. Footnote 127. Flynn directed McFarland to call the Washington Post columnist and inform him that no discussion of sanctions had occurred. Footnote 128. McFarland recalled that Flynn said words to the effect of, I want to kill the story. Footnote 129. McFarland made the call as Flynn had requested, although she knew she was providing false information, and the Washington Post updated the column to reflect that a, quote, Trump official, unquote, had denied that Flynn and Kislyak discussed sanctions. Footnote 130. When Priebus and other incoming administration officials questioned Flynn internally about the Washington Post column, Flynn maintained that he had not discussed sanctions with Kislyak. Footnote 131. Flynn repeated that claim to Vice President-elect Michael Pence and to incoming Press Secretary Sean Spicer. Footnote 132. In subsequent media interviews in mid-January, Pence, Priebus, and Spicer denied that Flynn and Kislyak had discussed sanctions, basing those denials on their conversations with Flynn. Footnote 133. The public statements of incoming administration officials denying that Flynn and Kislyak had discussed sanctions alarmed senior DOJ officials, who were aware that the statements were not true. Footnote 134. Those officials were concerned that Flynn had lied to his colleagues, who in turn had unwittingly misled the American public, creating a compromise situation for Flynn because the Department of Justice assessed that the Russian government could prove Flynn lied. Footnote 135. The FBI investigative team also believed that Flynn's calls with Kislyak and subsequent denials about discussing sanctions raised potential Logan Act issues and were relevant to the FBI's broader Russia investigation. Footnote 136. On January 20, 2017, President Trump was inaugurated and Flynn was sworn in as National Security Advisor. On January 23, 2017, Spicer delivered his first press briefing and stated that he had spoken with Flynn the night before, who confirmed that the calls with Kislyak were about topics unrelated to sanctions. Footnote 137. Spicer's statements added to the Department of Justice's concerns that Russia had leverage over Flynn based on his lies and could use that derogatory information to compromise him. Footnote 138. On January 24, 2017, Flynn agreed to be interviewed by agents from the FBI. Footnote 139. During the interview, which took place at the White House, Flynn falsely stated that he did not ask Kislyak to refrain from escalating the situation in response to the sanctions on Russia imposed by the Obama administration. Footnote 140. Flynn also falsely stated that he did not remember a follow-up conversation in which Kislyak stated that Russia had chosen to moderate its response to those sanctions as a result of Flynn's request. Footnote 141. 4. DOJ officials notify the White House of their concerns about Flynn. On January 26, 2017, Acting Attorney General Sally Yates contacted White House Counsel Donald McGahn and informed him that she needed to discuss a sensitive matter with him in person. Footnote 142. Later that day, Yates and Mary McCord, a senior national security official at the Department of Justice, met at the White House with McGahn and White House Counsel's office attorney, James Burnham. Footnote 143. Yates said that the public statements made by the vice president denying that Flynn and Kislyak discussed sanctions were not true, and put Flynn in a potentially compromised position because the Russians would know he had lied. Footnote 144. Yates disclosed that Flynn had been interviewed by the FBI. Footnote 145. She declined to answer a specific question about how Flynn had performed during that interview. Footnote 146. But she indicated that Flynn's statements to the FBI were similar to the statements he had made to Pence and Spicer, denying that he had discussed sanctions. Footnote 147. McGahn came away from the meeting with the impression that the FBI had not pinned Flynn down in lies. Footnote 148. But he asked John Eisenberg, who served as legal advisor to the National Security Council, to examine potential legal issues raised by Flynn's FBI interview and his contacts with Kislyak. Footnote 149. That afternoon, McGahn notified the president that Yates had come to the White House to discuss concerns about Flynn. Footnote 150. McGahn described what Yates had told him, and the president asked him to repeat it, so he did. Footnote 151. McGahn recalled that when he described the FBI interview of Flynn, he said that Flynn did not disclose having discussed sanctions with Kislyak, but that there may not have been a clear violation of 18 U.S.C. Section 1001. Footnote 152. The president asked about Section 1001, and McGahn explained the law to him, and also explained the Logan Act. Footnote 153. The president instructed McGahn to work with Priebus and Bannon to look into the matter further, and directed that they not discuss it with any other officials. Footnote 154. Priebus recalled that the president was angry with Flynn in light of what Yates had told the White House and said, "Not again, this guy, this stuff." Footnote 155. That evening, the president dined with several senior advisors and asked the group what they thought about FBI Director Comey. Footnote 156. According to Director of National Intelligence Dan Coats, who was at the dinner, no one openly advocated terminating Comey, but the consensus on him was not positive. Footnote 157. Coats told the group that he thought Comey was a good director. Footnote 158. Coats encouraged the president to meet Comey face-to-face and spend time with him before making a decision about whether to retain him. Footnote 159. 5. McGahn has a follow-up meeting about Flynn with Yates. President Trump has dinner with FBI Director Comey. The next day, January 27, 2017, McGahn and Eisenberg discussed the results of Eisenberg's initial legal research into Flynn's conduct, and specifically whether Flynn may have violated the Espionage Act, the Logan Act, or 18 U.S.C. Section 1001. Footnote 160. Based on his preliminary research, Eisenberg informed McGahn that there was a possibility that Flynn had violated 18 U.S.C. Section 1001 and the Logan Act. Footnote 161. Eisenberg noted that the United States had never successfully prosecuted an individual under the Logan Act, and that Flynn could have possible defenses, and told McGahn that he believed it was unlikely that a prosecutor would pursue a Logan Act charge under the circumstances. Footnote 162. That same morning, McGahn asked Yates to return to the White House to discuss Flynn again. Footnote 163. In that second meeting, McGahn expressed doubts that the Department of Justice would bring a Logan Act prosecution against Flynn, but stated that the White House did not want to take action that would interfere with an ongoing FBI investigation of Flynn. Footnote 164. Yates responded that Department of Justice had notified the White House so that it could take action in response to the information provided. McGahn ended the meeting by asking Yates for access to the underlying information the Department of Justice possessed pertaining to Flynn's discussions with Kislyak. Footnote 166. Also on January 27th, the president called FBI Director Comey and invited him to dinner that evening. Footnote 167. Priebus recalled that before the dinner, he told the president something like, "Don't talk about Russia, whatever you do." And the president promised he would not talk about Russia at the dinner. Footnote 168. McGahn had previously advised the president that he should not communicate directly with the Department of Justice to avoid the perception or reality of political interference in law enforcement. Footnote 169. When Bannon learned about the president's planned dinner with Comey, he suggested that he or Priebus also attend, but the president stated that he wanted to dine with Comey alone. Footnote 170. Comey said that when he arrived for the dinner that evening, he was surprised and concerned to see that no one else had been invited. Footnote 171. Comey provided an account of the dinner in a contemporaneous memo, an interview with this office, and congressional testimony. According to Comey's account of the dinner, the president repeatedly brought up Comey's future, asking whether he wanted to stay on as FBI director. Footnote 172. Because the president had previously said he wanted Comey to stay on as FBI director, Comey interpreted the president's comments as an effort to create a patronage relationship by having Comey ask for his job. Footnote 173. The president also brought up the Steele reporting that Comey had raised in the January 6, 2017 briefing and stated that he was thinking about ordering the FBI to investigate the allegations to prove they were false. Footnote 174. Comey responded that the president should think carefully about issuing such an order because it could create a narrative that the FBI was investigating him personally, which was incorrect. Footnote 175. Later in the dinner, the president brought up Flynn and said, "The guy has serious judgment issues." Footnote 176. Comey did not comment on Flynn, and the president did not acknowledge any FBI interest in or contact with Flynn. Footnote 177. According to Comey's account, at one point during the dinner, the president stated, "I need loyalty. I expect loyalty." Footnote 178. Comey did not respond, and the conversation moved on to other topics. But the president returned to the subject of Comey's job at the end of the dinner and repeated, "I need loyalty." Footnote 179. Comey responded, "You will always get honesty from me." Footnote 180. The president said, "That's what I want, honest loyalty." Footnote 181. Comey said, "You will get that from me." Footnote 182. After Comey's account of the dinner became public, the president and his advisors disputed that he had asked for Comey's loyalty. Footnote 183. The president also indicated that he had not invited Comey to dinner, telling a reporter that he thought Comey had, quote, asked for the dinner, unquote, because, quote, he wanted to stay on, unquote. Footnote 184. But substantial evidence corroborates Comey's account of the dinner invitation and the request for loyalty. The president's daily diary confirms that the president, quote, extended a dinner invitation, unquote, to Comey on January 27th. Footnote 185. With respect to the substance of the dinner conversation, Comey documented the president's request for loyalty in a memorandum he began drafting the night of the dinner. Footnote 186. Senior FBI officials recall that Comey told them about the loyalty request shortly after the dinner occurred. Footnote 187. And Comey described the request, while under oath in congressional proceedings and in a subsequent interview with investigators subject to penalties for lying under 18 U.S.C. Section 1001. Comey's memory of the details of the dinner, including that the president requested loyalty, has remained consistent throughout. Footnote 188. 6. Flynn's resignation. On February 2, 2017, Eisenberg reviewed the underlying information relating to Flynn's calls with Kislyak. Footnote 189. Eisenberg recalled that he prepared a memorandum about criminal statutes that could apply to Flynn's conduct, but he did not believe the White House had enough information to make a definitive recommendation to the president. Footnote 190. Eisenberg and McGahn discussed that Eisenberg's review of the underlying information confirmed his preliminary conclusion that Flynn was unlikely to be prosecuted for violating the Logan Act. Footnote 191. Because White House officials were uncertain what Flynn had told the FBI, however, they could not assess his exposure to prosecution for violating 18 U.S.C. Section 1001, 192. The week of February 6th, Flynn had a one-on-one conversation with the president in the Oval Office about the negative media coverage of his contacts with Kislyak. Footnote 193. Flynn recalled that the president was upset and asked him for information on the conversations. Footnote 194. Flynn listed the specific dates on which he remembered speaking with Kislyak, but the president corrected one of the dates he listed. Footnote 195. The president asked Flynn what he and Kislyak discussed, and Flynn responded that he might have talked about sanctions. Footnote 196. On February 9, 2017, The Washington Post reported that Flynn discussed sanctions with Kislyak the month before the president took office. Footnote 197. After the publication of that story, Vice President Pence learned of the Department of Justice's notification to the White House about the content of Flynn's calls. Footnote 198. He and other advisors then sought access to and reviewed the underlying information about Flynn's contacts with Kislyak. Footnote 199. FBI Deputy Director Andrew McCabe, who provided the White House officials access to the information and was present when they reviewed it, recalled the officials asking him whether Flynn's conduct violated the Logan Act. Footnote 200. McCabe responded that he did not know, but the FBI was investigating the matter because it was a possibility. Footnote 201. Based on the evidence of Flynn's contacts with Kislyak, McGann and Priebus concluded that Flynn could not have forgotten the details of the discussions of sanctions and had instead been lying about what he discussed with Kislyak. Footnote 202. Flynn had also told White House officials that the FBI had told him that the FBI was closing out its investigation of him. Footnote 203. But Eisenberg did not believe him. Footnote 204. After reviewing the materials and speaking with Flynn, McGann and Priebus concluded that Flynn should be terminated and recommended that course of action to the president. Footnote 205. That weekend, Flynn accompanied the president to Mar-a-Lago. Footnote 206. Flynn recalled that on February 12, 2017, on the return flight to D.C. on Air Force One, the president asked him whether he had lied to the vice president. Footnote 207. Flynn responded that he may have forgotten details of his calls, but he did not think he lied. Footnote 208. The president responded, "Okay, that's fine. I got it." Footnote 209. On February 13, 2017, Priebus told Flynn he had to resign. Footnote 210. Flynn said he wanted to say goodbye to the president, so Priebus brought him to the Oval Office. Footnote 211. Priebus recalled that the president hugged Flynn, shook his hand, and said, "We'll give you a good recommendation. You're a good guy. We'll take care of you." Footnote 212. Talking points on the resignation prepared by the White House counsel's office and distributed to the White House communications team stated that McGann had advised the president that Flynn was unlikely to be prosecuted, and the president had determined that the issue with Flynn was one of trust. Footnote 213. Spicer told the press the next day that Flynn was forced to resign, quote, "not based on a legal issue, but based on a trust issue, where a level of trust between the president and General Flynn had eroded to the point where the president felt he had to make a change," unquote. Footnote 214. 7. The President Discusses Flynn with FBI Director Comey. On February 14, 2017, the day after Flynn's resignation, the president had lunch at the White House with New Jersey Governor Chris Christie. Footnote 215. According to Christie, at one point during the lunch, the president said, "Now that we fired Flynn, the Russia thing is over." Footnote 216. Christie laughed and responded, "No way." Footnote 217. He said, "This Russia thing is far from over, and we'll be here on Valentine's Day 2018 talking about this." Footnote 218. The president said, "What do you mean? Flynn met with the Russians. That was the problem. I fired Flynn. It's over." Footnote 219. Christie recalled responding that based on his experience both as a prosecutor and as someone who had been investigated, firing Flynn would not end the investigation. Footnote 220. Christie said there was no way to make an investigation shorter, but a lot of ways to make it longer. Footnote 221. The president asked Christie what he meant, and Christie told the president not to talk about the investigation, even if he were frustrated at times. Footnote 222. Christie also told the president that he would never be able to get rid of Flynn, quote, "like gum on the bottom of your shoe," unquote. Footnote 223. Towards the end of the lunch, the president brought up Comey and asked if Christie was still friendly with him. Footnote 224. Christie said he was. Footnote 225. The president told Christie to call Comey and tell him that the president really likes him. Tell him he's part of the team. Footnote 226. At the end of the lunch, the president repeated his request that Christie reach out to Comey. Footnote 227. Christie had no intention of complying with the president's request that he contact Comey. Footnote 228. He thought the president's request was, quote, nonsensical, unquote, and Christie did not want to put Comey in the position of having to receive such a phone call. Footnote 229. Christie thought it would have been uncomfortable to pass on that message. Footnote 230. At 4 p.m. that afternoon, the president met with Comey, Sessions, and other officials for a Homeland Security briefing. Footnote 231. At the end of the briefing, the president dismissed the other attendees and stated that he wanted to speak to Comey alone. Footnote 232. Sessions and senior advisor to the president, Jared Kushner, remained in the Oval Office as other participants left, but the president excused them, repeating that he wanted to speak only with Comey. Footnote 233. At some point, after others had left the Oval Office, Priebus opened the door, but the president sent him away. Footnote 234. According to Comey's account of the meeting, once they were alone, the president began the conversation by saying, "I want to talk about Mike Flynn." Footnote 235. The president stated that Flynn had not done anything wrong in speaking with the Russians, but had to be terminated because he had misled the vice president. Footnote 236. The conversation turned to the topic of leaks of classified information, but the president returned to Flynn, saying, "He is a good guy and has been through a lot." Footnote 237. The president stated, "I hope you can see your way clear to letting this go, to letting Flynn go. He is a good guy. I hope you can let this go." Footnote 238. Comey agreed that Flynn, quote, "is a good guy," unquote, but did not commit to ending the investigation of Flynn. Footnote 239. Comey testified under oath that he took the president's statement, quote, "as a direction," unquote, because of the president's position and the circumstances of the one-on-one meeting. Footnote 240. Shortly after meeting with the president, Comey began drafting a memorandum documenting their conversation. Footnote 241. Comey also met with his senior leadership team to discuss the president's request, and they agreed not to inform FBI officials working on the Flynn case of the president's statements, so the officials would not be influenced by the request. Footnote 242. Comey also asked for a meeting with Sessions and requested that Sessions not leave Comey alone with the president again. Footnote 243. 8. The media raises questions about the president's delay in terminating Flynn. After Flynn was forced to resign, the press raised questions about why the president waited more than 2 weeks after the DOJ notification to remove Flynn, and whether the president had known about Flynn's contacts with Kislyak before the DOJ notification. Footnote 244. The press also continued to raise questions about connections between Russia and the president's campaign. Footnote 245. On February 15, 2017, the president told reporters, "General Flynn is a wonderful man. I think he's been treated very, very unfairly by the media." Footnote 246. On February 16, 2017, the president held a press conference and said that he removed Flynn because Flynn, quote, "didn't tell the Vice President of the United States the facts, and then he didn't remember, and that just wasn't acceptable to me," unquote. Footnote 247. The president said he did not direct Flynn to discuss sanctions with Kislyak, but, quote, "it certainly would have been okay with me if he did. I would have directed him to do it if I thought he wasn't doing it. I didn't direct him, but I would have directed him, because that's his job," unquote. Footnote 248. In listing the reasons for terminating Flynn, the president did not say that Flynn had lied to him. footnote 249. The president also denied having any connection to Russia, stating, "I have nothing to do with Russia. I told you, I have no deals there. I have no anything." Footnote 250. The president also said he, quote, "had nothing to do with," unquote, WikiLeaks' publication of information hacked from the Clinton campaign. Footnote 251. 9. The president attempts to have K.T. McFarland create a witness statement denying that he directed Flynn's discussions with Kislyak. On February 22, 2017, Priebus and Bannon told McFarland that the president wanted her to resign as Deputy National Security Advisor, but they suggested to her that the administration could make her the ambassador to Singapore. Footnote 252. The next day, the president asked Priebus to have McFarland draft an internal email that would confirm that the president did not direct Flynn to call the Russian ambassador about sanctions. Footnote 253. Priebus said he told the president he would only direct McFarland to write such a letter if she were comfortable with it. Footnote 254. Priebus called McFarland into his office to convey the president's request that she memorialize in writing that the president did not direct Flynn to talk to Kislyak. Footnote 255. McFarland told Priebus she did not know whether the president had directed Flynn to talk to Kislyak about sanctions, and she declined to say yes or no to the request. Footnote 256. Priebus understood that McFarland was not comfortable with the president's request, and he recommended that she talk to attorneys in the White House counsel's office. Footnote 257. McFarland then reached out to Eisenberg. Footnote 258. McFarland told him that she had been fired from her job as Deputy National Security Advisor and offered the ambassadorship in Singapore, but that the president and Priebus wanted a letter from her denying that the president directed Flynn to discuss sanctions with Kislyak. Footnote 259. Eisenberg advised McFarland not to write the requested letter. Footnote 260. As documented by McFarland in a contemporaneous memorandum for the record that she wrote because she was concerned by the president's request, Eisenberg thought the requested email and letter would be a bad idea, from my side, because the email would be awkward. Why would I be emailing Priebus to make a statement for the record? But it would also be a bad idea for the president, because it looked as if my ambassadorial appointment was in some way a quid pro quo. Footnote 261. Later that evening, Priebus stopped by McFarland's office and told her not to write the email and to forget he even mentioned it. Footnote 262. Around the same time, the president asked Priebus to reach out to Flynn and let him know that the president still cared about him. Footnote 263. Priebus called Flynn and said that he was checking in and that Flynn was an American hero. Footnote 264. Priebus thought the president did not want Flynn saying bad things about him. Footnote 265. On March 31, 2017, following news that Flynn had offered to testify before the FBI and congressional investigators in exchange for immunity, the president tweeted, "Mike Flynn should ask for immunity in that this is a witch hunt, excuse for big election loss by media and Dems of historic proportion." Footnote 266. In late March or early April, the president asked McFarland to pass a message to Flynn telling him the president felt bad for him and that he should stay strong. Footnote 267. Analysis. In analyzing the president's conduct related to the Flynn investigation, the following evidence is relevant to the elements of obstruction of justice. A. Obstructive act. According to Comey's account of his February 14, 2017 meeting in the Oval Office, the president told him, "I hope you can see your way clear to letting this go, to letting Flynn go. I hope you can let this go." In analyzing whether these statements constitute an obstructive act, A threshold question is whether Comey's account of the interaction is accurate, and if so, whether the president's statements had the tendency to impede the administration of justice by shutting down an inquiry that could result in a grand jury investigation and a criminal charge. After Comey's account of the president's request to, quote, let Flynn go, unquote, became public, the president publicly disputed several aspects of the story. The president told the New York Times that he did not, quote, shoo other people out of the room, unquote, when he talked to Comey, and that he did not remember having a one-on-one conversation with Comey. Footnote 268. The president also publicly denied that he had asked Comey to, quote, let Flynn go, unquote, or otherwise communicated that Comey should drop the investigation of Flynn. Footnote 269. In private, the president denied aspects of Comey's account to White House advisors, but acknowledged to Priebus that he brought Flynn up in the meeting with Comey and stated that Flynn was a good guy. Footnote 270. Despite those denials, substantial evidence corroborates Comey's account. First, Comey wrote a detailed memorandum of his encounter with the president on the same day it occurred. Comey also told senior FBI officials about the meeting with the president that day, and their recollections of what Comey told them at the time are consistent with Comey's account. Footnote 271. Second, Comey provided testimony about the president's request that he, quote, let Flynn go, unquote, under oath in congressional proceedings and in interviews with federal investigators subject to penalties for lying under 18 U.S.C. Section 1001. Comey's recollections of the encounter have remained consistent over time. Third, the objective, corroborated circumstances of how the one-on-one meeting came to occur support Comey's description of the event. Comey recalled that the president cleared the room to speak with Comey alone after a Homeland Security briefing in the Oval Office, that Kushner and Sessions lingered and had to be shooed out by the president, and that Priebus briefly opened the door during the meeting, prompting the president to wave him away. While the president has publicly denied those details, other administration officials who were present have confirmed Comey's account of how he ended up in a one-on-one meeting with the president. Footnote 272. And the president acknowledged to Priebus and McGahn that he in fact spoke to Comey about Flynn in their one-on-one meeting. Fourth, the president's decision to clear the room, and in particular, to exclude the attorney general from the meeting, signals that the president wanted to be alone with Comey, which is consistent with the delivery of a message of the type that Comey recalls, rather than a more innocuous conversation that could have occurred in the presence of the attorney general. Finally, Comey's reaction to the president's statements is consistent with the president having asked him to, quote, let Flynn go, unquote. Comey met with the FBI leadership team, which agreed to keep the president's statements closely held and not to inform the team working on the Flynn investigation so that they would not be influenced by the president's request. Comey also promptly met with the attorney general to ask him not to be left alone with the president again, an account verified by Sessions, FBI Chief of Staff James Rubicki, and Jody Hunt, who was then the attorney general's chief of staff. A second question is whether the president's statements, which were not phrased as a direct order to Comey, could impede or interfere with the FBI's investigation of Flynn. While the president said he, quote, hoped, unquote, Comey could, quote, let Flynn go, unquote, rather than affirmatively directing him to do so, the circumstances of the conversation show that the president was asking Comey to close the FBI's investigation into Flynn. First, the president arranged the meeting with Comey so that they would be alone and purposely excluded the attorney general, which suggests that the president meant to make a request to Comey that he did not want anyone else to hear. Second, because the president is the head of the executive branch, when he says that he, quote, hopes, unquote, a subordinate will do something, it is reasonable to expect that the subordinate will do what the president wants. Indeed, the president repeated a version of, quote, let this go, unquote, three times, and Comey testified that he understood the president's statements as a directive, which is corroborated by the way Comey reacted at the time. B. Nexus to a proceeding. To establish a nexus to a proceeding, it would be necessary to show that the president could reasonably foresee and actually contemplated that the investigation of Flynn was likely to lead to a grand jury investigation or prosecution. At the time of the president's one-on-one meeting with Comey, no grand jury subpoenas had been issued as part of the FBI's investigation into Flynn. But Flynn's lies to the FBI violated federal criminal law, redaction, grand jury, and resulted in Flynn's prosecution for violating 18 U.S.C. Section 1001. By the time the president spoke to Comey about Flynn, DOJ officials had informed McGahn, who informed the president, that Flynn's statements to senior White House officials about his contacts with Kislyak were not true, and that Flynn had told the same version of events to the FBI. McGahn also informed the president that Flynn's conduct could violate 18 U.S.C. Section 1001. After the vice president and senior White House officials reviewed the underlying information about Flynn's calls on February 10, 2017, they believed that Flynn could not have forgotten his conversations with Kislyak and concluded that he had been lying. In addition, the president's instruction to the FBI director to, quote, let Flynn go, unquote, suggests his awareness that Flynn could face criminal exposure for his conduct and was at risk of prosecution. C. Intent. As part of our investigation, we examined whether the president had a personal stake in the outcome of an investigation into Flynn. For example, whether the president was aware of Flynn's communications with Kislyak close in time to when they occurred, such that the president knew that Flynn had lied to senior White House officials and that those lies had been passed on to the public. Some evidence suggests that the president knew about the existence and content of Flynn's calls when they occurred, but the evidence is inconclusive and could not be relied upon to establish the president's knowledge. In advance of Flynn's initial call with Kislyak, the president attended a meeting where the sanctions were discussed, and an advisor may have mentioned that Flynn was scheduled to talk to Kislyak. Flynn told McFarland about the substance of his calls with Kislyak and said they may have made a difference in Russia's response, and Flynn recalled talking to Bannon in early January 2017 about how they had successfully, quote, stopped the train on Russia's response, unquote, to the sanctions. It would have been reasonable for Flynn to have wanted the president to know of his communications with Kislyak, because Kislyak told Flynn his request had been received at the highest levels in Russia, and that Russia had chosen not to retaliate in response to the request, and the president was pleased by the Russian response, calling it a, quote, great move, unquote. And the president never said publicly or internally that Flynn had lied to him about the calls with Kislyak. But McFarland did not recall providing the president-elect with Flynn's readout of his calls with Kislyak, and Flynn does not have a specific recollection of telling the president-elect directly about the calls. Bannon also said he did not recall hearing about the calls from Flynn. And in February 2017, the president asked Flynn what was discussed on the calls and whether he had lied to the vice president, suggesting that he did not already know. Our investigation, accordingly, did not produce evidence that established that the president knew about Flynn's discussions of sanctions before the Department of Justice notified the White House of those discussions in late January 2017. The evidence also does not establish that Flynn otherwise possessed information damaging to the president that would give the president a personal incentive to end the FBI's inquiry into Flynn's conduct. Evidence does establish that the president connected the Flynn investigation to the FBI's broader Russia investigation, and that he believed, as he told Christie, that terminating Flynn would end, quote, the whole Russia thing, unquote. Flynn's firing occurred at a time when the media and Congress were raising questions about Russia's interference in the election and whether members of the president's campaign had colluded with Russia. Multiple witnesses recalled that the president viewed the Russia investigations as a challenge to the legitimacy of his election. The president paid careful attention to negative coverage of Flynn and reacted with annoyance and anger when the story broke disclosing that Flynn had discussed sanctions with Kislyak. Just hours before meeting one-on-one with Comey, the president told Christie that firing Flynn would put an end to the Russia inquiries. And after Christie pushed back, telling the president that firing Flynn would not end the Russia investigation, the president asked Christie to reach out to Comey and convey that the president liked him and he was part of, quote, the team, unquote. That afternoon, the president cleared the room and asked Comey to, quote, let Flynn go, unquote. We also sought evidence relevant to assessing whether the president's direction to Comey was motivated by sympathy towards Flynn. In public statements, the president repeatedly described Flynn as a good person who had been harmed by the Russia investigation, and the president directed advisers to reach out to Flynn to tell him the president, quote, cared, unquote, about him and felt bad for him. At the same time, multiple senior advisers, including Bannon, Priebus, and Hicks, said that the president had become unhappy with Flynn well before Flynn was forced to resign, and that the president was frequently irritated with Flynn. Priebus said he believed the president's initial reluctance to fire Flynn stemmed not from personal regard, but from concern about the negative press that would be generated by firing the national security advisor so early in the administration. And Priebus indicated that the president's post-firing expressions of support for Flynn were motivated by the president's desire to keep Flynn from saying negative things about him. The way in which the president communicated the request to Comey also is relevant to understanding the president's intent. When the president first learned about the FBI investigation into Flynn, he told McGahn, Bannon, and Priebus not to discuss the matter with anyone else in the White House. The next day, the president invited Comey for a one-on-one dinner against the advice of an aide who recommended that other White House officials also attend. At the dinner, the president asked Comey for, quote, loyalty, unquote, and at a different point in the conversation, mentioned that Flynn had judgment issues. When the president met with Comey the day after Flynn's termination, shortly after being told by Christie that firing Flynn would not end the Russia investigation, the president cleared the room, even excluding the attorney general, so that he could again speak to Comey alone. The president's decision to meet one-on-one with Comey contravened the advice of the White House counsel that the president should not communicate directly with the Department of Justice to avoid any appearance of interfering in law enforcement activities. And the president later denied that he cleared the room and asked Comey to, quote, let Flynn go, unquote, a denial that would have been unnecessary if he believed his request was a proper exercise of prosecutorial discretion. Finally, the president's efforts to have McFarland write an internal email denying that the president had directed Flynn to discuss sanctions with Kislyak highlights the president's concern about being associated with Flynn's conduct. The evidence does not establish that the president was trying to have McFarland lie. The president's request, however, was sufficiently irregular that McFarland, who did not know the full extent of Flynn's communications with the president and thus could not make the representation the president wanted, felt the need to draft an internal memorandum documenting the president's request. And Eisenberg was concerned that the request would look like a quid pro quo in exchange for an ambassadorship.
C. The president's reaction to public confirmation of the FBI's Russia investigation. Overview. In early March 2017, the president learned that Sessions was considering recusing from the Russia investigation and tried to prevent the recusal. After Sessions announced his recusal on March 2nd, the president expressed anger at Sessions for the decision and then privately asked Sessions to unrecuse. On March 20th, 2017, Comey publicly disclosed the existence of the FBI's Russia investigation. In the days that followed, the president contacted Comey and other intelligence agency leaders and asked them to push back publicly on the suggestion that the president had any connection to the Russia election interference effort in order to lift the cloud of the ongoing investigation. Evidence. 1. Attorney General Sessions recuses from the Russia investigation. In late February 2017, the Department of Justice began an internal analysis of whether Sessions should recuse from the Russia investigation based on his role in the 2016 Trump campaign. Footnote 273. On March 1, 2017, the press reported that, in his January confirmation hearing to become Attorney General, Senator Sessions had not disclosed two meetings he had with Russian Ambassador Kislyak before the presidential election, leading to congressional calls for Sessions to recuse or for a special counsel to investigate Russia's interference in the presidential election. Footnote 274. Also on March 1st, the president called Comey and said he wanted to check in and see how Comey was doing. Footnote 275. According to an email Comey sent to his chief of staff after the call, the president talked about Sessions a bit, said that he had heard Comey was doing great, and said that he hoped Comey would come by to say hello when he was at the White House. Footnote 276. Comey interpreted the call as an effort by the president to pull him in, but he did not perceive the call as an attempt by the president to find out what Comey was doing with the Flynn investigation. Footnote 277. The next morning, the president called McGahn and urged him to contact Sessions to tell him not to recuse himself from the Russia investigation. Footnote 278. McGahn understood the president to be concerned that a recusal would make Sessions look guilty for omitting details in his confirmation hearing, leave the president unprotected from an investigation that could hobble the presidency and derail his policy objectives, and detract from favorable press coverage of a presidential address to Congress the president had delivered earlier in the week. Footnote 279. McGahn reached out to Sessions and reported that the president was not happy about the possibility of recusal. Footnote 280. Sessions replied that he intended to follow the rules on recusal. Footnote 281. McGahn reported back to the president about the call with Sessions, and the president reiterated that he did not want Sessions to recuse. Footnote 282. Throughout the day, McGahn continued trying on behalf of the president to avert Sessions' recusal by speaking to Sessions' personal counsel, Sessions' chief of staff, and Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, and by contacting Sessions himself two more times. Footnote 283. Sessions recalled that other White House advisors also called him that day to argue against his recusal. Footnote 284. That afternoon, Sessions announced his decision to recuse from any existing or future investigations of any matters related in any way to the campaigns for President of the United States. Footnote 285. Sessions believed the decision to recuse was not a close call, given the applicable language in the Code of Federal Regulations, CFR, which Sessions considered to be clear and decisive. Footnote 286. Sessions thought that any argument that the CFR did not apply to him was very thin. Footnote 287. Sessions got the impression, based on calls he received from White House officials, that the president was very upset with him and did not think he had done his duty as Attorney General. Footnote 288. Shortly after Sessions announced his recusal, the White House counsel's office directed that Sessions should not be contacted about the matter. Footnote 289. Internal White House counsel's office notes from March 2, 2017 state, no contact with Sessions and no comms/serious concerns about obstruction. Footnote 290. On March 3, the day after Sessions' recusal, McGahn was called into the Oval Office. Footnote 291. Other advisors were there, including Priebus and Bannon. Footnote 292. The president opened the conversation by saying, "I don't have a lawyer." Footnote 293. The president expressed anger at McGahn about the recusal and brought up Roy Cohn, stating that he wished Cohn was his attorney. Footnote 294. McGahn interpreted this comment as directed at him, suggesting that Cohn would fight for the president, whereas McGahn would not. Footnote 295. The president wanted McGahn to talk to Sessions about the recusal, but McGahn told the president that DOJ ethics officials had weighed in on Sessions' decision to recuse. Footnote 296. The president then brought up former Attorneys General Robert Kennedy and Eric Holder and said that they had protected their presidents. Footnote 297. The president also pushed back on the DOJ contacts policy and said words to the effect of, "You're telling me that Bobby and Jack didn't talk about investigations? Or Obama didn't tell Eric Holder who to investigate?" Footnote 298. Bannon recalled that the president was as mad as Bannon had ever seen him and that he screamed at McGahn about how weak Sessions was. Footnote 299. Bannon recalled telling the president that Sessions' recusal was not a surprise and that before the inauguration, they had discussed that Sessions would have to recuse from campaign-related investigations because of his work on the Trump campaign. Footnote 300. That weekend, Sessions and McGahn flew to Mar-a-Lago to meet with the president. Footnote 301. Sessions recalled that the president pulled him aside to speak to him alone and suggested that Sessions should unrecuse from the Russia investigation. Footnote 302. The president contrasted Sessions with Attorneys General Holder and Kennedy, who had developed a strategy to help their presidents where Sessions had not. Footnote 303. Sessions said he had the impression that the president feared that the investigation could spin out of control and disrupt his ability to govern, which Sessions could have helped avert if he were still overseeing it. Footnote 304. On March 5, 2017, the White House counsel's office was informed that the FBI was asking for transition period records relating to Flynn, indicating that the FBI was still actively investigating him. Footnote 305. On March 6th, the president told advisors he wanted to call the acting attorney general to find out whether the White House or the president was being investigated, although it is not clear whether the president knew at the time of the FBI's recent request concerning Flynn. Footnote 306. 2. FBI Director Comey publicly confirms the existence of the Russia investigation in testimony before HPSCI. On March 9, 2017, Comey briefed the Gang of Eight congressional leaders about the FBI's investigation of Russian interference, including an identification of the principal U.S. subjects of the investigation, footnote 307. Although it is unclear whether the president knew of that briefing at the time, notes taken by Annie Donaldson, then McGahn's chief of staff, on March 12, 2017, state, "POTUS in panic/chaos. Need binders to put in front of POTUS. 1. All things related to Russia." Footnote 308. The week after Comey's briefing, the White House counsel's office was in contact with SSCI Chairman Senator Richard Burr about the Russia investigations and appears to have received information about the status of the FBI investigation. Footnote 309. On March 20th, 2017, Comey was scheduled to testify before HPSCI. Footnote 310. In advance of Comey's testimony, congressional officials made clear that they wanted Comey to provide information about the ongoing FBI investigation. Footnote 311. Dana Bente, who at the time was the acting attorney general for the Russia investigation, authorized Comey to confirm the existence of the Russia investigation and agreed that Comey should decline to comment on whether any particular individuals, including the president, were being investigated. Footnote 312. In his opening remarks at the HPSCI hearing, which were drafted in consultation with the Department of Justice, Comey stated that he had been authorized by the Department of Justice to confirm that the FBI, as part of its counterintelligence mission, is investigating the Russian government's efforts to interfere in the 2016 presidential election. And that includes investigating the nature of any links between individuals associated with the Trump campaign and the Russian government, and whether there was any coordination between the campaign and Russia's efforts. As with any counterintelligence investigation, this will also include an assessment of whether any crimes were committed. Footnote 313. Comey added that he would not comment further on what the FBI was doing and whose conduct it was examining, because its investigation was ongoing and classified. But he observed that he had taken the extraordinary step in consultation with the Department of Justice of briefing this Congress's leaders, in a classified setting, in detail about the investigation. Footnote 314. Comey was specifically asked whether President Trump was under investigation during the campaign or under investigation now. Footnote 315. Comey declined to answer, stating, "Please don't overinterpret what I've said as the chair and ranking know, we have briefed him in great detail on the subjects of the investigation and what we're doing, but I'm not going to answer about anybody in this forum." Footnote 316. Comey was also asked whether the FBI was investigating the information contained in the Steele reporting, and he declined to answer. Footnote 317. According to McGahn and Donaldson, the president had expressed frustration with Comey before his March 20th testimony, and the testimony made matters worse. Footnote 318. The president had previously criticized Comey for too frequently making headlines and for not attending intelligence briefings at the White House, and the president suspected Comey of leaking certain information to the media. Footnote 319. McGahn said the president thought Comey was acting like his own branch of government. Footnote 320. Press reports following Comey's March 20th testimony suggested that the FBI was investigating the president, contrary to what Comey had told the president at the end of the January 6, 2017 intelligence assessment briefing. Footnote 321. McGahn, Donaldson, and senior advisor Stephen Miller recalled that the president was upset with Comey's testimony and the press coverage that followed because of the suggestion that the president was under investigation. Footnote 322. Notes from the White House counsel's office dated March 21, 2017, indicate that the president was beside himself over Comey's testimony. Footnote 323. The president called McGahn repeatedly that day to ask him to intervene with the Department of Justice. And, according to the notes, the president was getting hotter and hotter, get rid. Footnote 324. Officials in the White House counsel's office became so concerned that the president would fire Comey that they began drafting a memorandum that examined whether the president needed cause to terminate the FBI director. Footnote 325. At the president's urging, McGahn contacted Bente several times on March 21, 2017, to seek Bente's assistance in having Comey or the Department of Justice correct the misperception that the president was under investigation. Footnote 326. Bente did not specifically recall the conversations, although he did remember one conversation with McGahn around this time, where McGahn asked if there was a way to speed up or end the Russia investigation as quickly as possible. Footnote 327. Bente said McGahn told him the president was under a cloud and it made it hard for him to govern. Footnote 328. Bente recalled telling McGahn that there was no good way to shorten the investigation, and attempting to do so could erode confidence in the investigation's conclusions. Footnote 329. Bente said McGahn agreed and dropped the issue. Footnote 330. The president also sought to speak with Bente directly, but McGahn told the president that Bente did not want to talk to the president about the request to intervene with Comey. Footnote 331. McGahn recalled Bente telling him in calls that day that he did not think it was sustainable for Comey to stay on as FBI director for the next 4 years, which McGahn said he conveyed to the president. Footnote 332. Bente did not recall discussing with McGahn or anyone else the idea that Comey should not continue as FBI director. Footnote 333. 3. The president asks intelligence community leaders to make public statements that he had no connection to Russia. In the weeks following Comey's March 20, 2017 testimony, the president repeatedly asked intelligence community officials to push back publicly on any suggestion that the president had a connection to the Russia election interference effort. On March 22, 2017, the president asked Director of National Intelligence Daniel Coats and CIA Director Michael Pompeo to stay behind in the Oval Office after a presidential daily briefing. Footnote 334. According to Coats, the president asked them whether they could say publicly that no link existed between him and Russia. Footnote 335. Coats responded that the Office of the Director of National Intelligence, ODNI, has nothing to do with investigations, and it was not his role to make a public statement on the Russia investigation. Footnote 336. Pompeo had no recollection of being asked to stay behind after the March 22nd briefing, but he recalled that the president regularly urged officials to get the word out that he had not done anything wrong related to Russia. Footnote 337. Coats told this office that the president never asked him to speak to Comey about the FBI investigation. Footnote 338. Some ODNI staffers, however, had a different recollection of how Coats described the meeting immediately after it occurred. According to senior ODNI official Michael Dempsey, Coats said after the meeting that the president had brought up the Russia investigation and asked him to contact Comey to see if there was a way to get past the investigation, get it over with, end it, or words to that effect. Footnote 339. Dempsey said that Coats described the president's comments as falling somewhere between musing about hating the investigation and wanting Coats to do something to stop it. Footnote 340. Dempsey said Coats made it clear that he would not get involved with an ongoing FBI investigation. Footnote 341. Edward Gistero, another ODNI official, recalled that right after Coats' meeting with the president, on the walk from the Oval Office back to the Eisenhower Executive Office Building, Coats said that the president had kept him behind to ask him what he could do to help with the investigation. Footnote 342. Another ODNI staffer who had been waiting for Coats outside the Oval Office talked to Gistero a few minutes later and recalled Gistero reporting that Coats was upset because the president had asked him to contact Comey to convince him there was nothing to the Russia investigation. Footnote 343. On Saturday, March 25th, 2017, 3 days after the meeting in the Oval Office, the president called Coats and again complained about the Russia investigations, saying words to the effect of, "I can't do anything with Russia. There's things I'd like to do with Russia, with trade, with ISIS. They're all over me with this." Footnote 344. Coats told the president that the investigations were going to go on, and the best thing to do was to let them run their course. Footnote 345. Coats later testified in a congressional hearing that he had never felt pressure to intervene or interfere in any way and shape with shaping intelligence in a political way or in relationship to an ongoing investigation. Footnote 346. On March 26, 2017, the day after the president called Coats, the president called NSA Director Admiral Michael Rogers. Footnote 347. The president expressed frustration with the Russia investigation, saying that it made relations with the Russians difficult. Footnote 348. The president told Rogers the thing with the Russians was messing up his ability to get things done with Russia. Footnote 349. The president also said that the news stories linking him with Russia were not true and asked Rogers if he could do anything to refute the stories. Footnote 350. Deputy Director of the NSA, Richard Leggett, who was present for the call, said it was the most unusual thing he had experienced in 40 years of government service. Footnote 351. After the call concluded, Leggett prepared a memorandum that he and Rogers both signed, documenting the content of the conversation and the president's request, and they placed the memorandum in a safe. Footnote 352. But Rogers did not perceive the president's request to be an order, and the president did not ask Rogers to push back on the Russia investigation itself. Footnote 353. Rogers later testified in a congressional hearing that as NSA director, he had never been directed to do anything he believed to be illegal, immoral, unethical, or inappropriate, and did not recall ever feeling pressured to do so. Footnote 354. In addition to the specific comments made to Coates, Pompeo, and Rogers, the president spoke on other occasions in the presence of intelligence community officials about the Russia investigation and stated that it interfered with his ability to conduct foreign relations. Footnote 355. On at least two occasions, the president began presidential daily briefings by stating that there was no collusion with Russia and he hoped a press statement to that effect could be issued. Footnote 356. Pompeo recalled that the president vented about the investigation on multiple occasions, complaining that there was no evidence against him and that nobody would publicly defend him. Footnote 357. Rogers recalled a private conversation with the president in which he vented about the investigation, said he had done nothing wrong, and said something like, "The Russia thing has got to go away." Footnote 358. Coates recalled the president bringing up the Russia investigation several times, and Coates said he finally told the president that Coates' job was to provide intelligence and not get involved in investigations. Footnote 359. 4. The president asks Comey to lift the cloud created by the Russia investigation. On the morning of March 30th, 2017, the president reached out to Comey directly about the Russia investigation. Footnote 360. According to Comey's contemporaneous record of the conversation, the president said he was trying to run the country and the cloud of this Russia business was making that difficult. Footnote 361. The president asked Comey what could be done to lift the cloud. Footnote 362. Comey explained that we were running it down as quickly as possible, and that there would be great benefit if we didn't find anything to our good housekeeping seal of approval, but we had to do our work. Footnote 363. Comey also told the president